I can barely get any reception on this stupid thing. So far, the only station that comes in is some British guys reading news from places I'm not sure exist.
Today, in Kazakhstan, a peaceful demonstration turned to bloodshed as members of the Tuzili tribe flooded Kenpow Square in remembrance of the third anniversary of the Holmesburg Massacre. And now with sports, here's Framtel Tromwibbler.
You're listening to The Hockey Show, broadcasting at 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I'm not sure about any of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
In the first game of my rookie season, I was way out of my league. Molly coddled in a coliseum, falling apart at the seams. Everybody laughed at me like I was a chimpanzee. Shouting at the sky, I swore to fly. Now look at me. Thank you and good night. I'll be seeing you and I'll be seeing you. Sorry I never did get the memo. My drummer is playing off key.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-based radio show that strictly talks hockey. Brand new Weezer kick it off here tonight. Happy to have them back in terms of a hard rock sound that they brought back. Not that I'm complaining about Rivers Cuomo and his falsetto, but a little more rock than what we'd heard in previous albums from them, so good to hear that.
This brings me back to, like, the early 2000s, like, NHL soundtracks.
Yeah,
this is great.
That's what I mean. This is solid stuff. So, Rivers Cuomo and Weezer kicking it off a little earlier here on the Hockey Show than normal. Jay, how's everything going as we fade them out?
Great. It is a sweltering day outside, so happy to be in here.
I was going to say, to steal a line from another song, man, it's a hot one.
Yeah.
Like 7 inches from the midday sun.
I feel really bad because my parents, their air conditioning died. Like, the last, like, little heat wave we had last weekend, their air conditioning died that day.
Oh.
So I'm sitting in my apartment, and the air conditioner did not stop for like 48 hours because it's set to auto. So, like, when it gets to the right temperature, it just shuts off.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just constantly going. It could not make the room cold enough. But I went to visit, and I swear, I probably...
Sweltering in that sauna they have there now?
Yes.
Yeah?
All the windows open, a bunch of fans going, and it's torture.
That's brutal. Well, hopefully your parents can get through that. That's all right in terms of setup. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're running a bit of a contest. Guess the Bison. I'm just going to give you the clues again. If you know who this is, please call in. There's a $25 gift card to Tim Hortons that I have here that legitimately is up for grabs if you want to drink yourself some coffee and eat some donuts and whatever else you can do here. But here are the clues again, okay? Here are the clues. Again, Jason could not guess this person last week. He was overthinking it, I think, a little bit, but we'll leave it at that. Okay, so again, this person played for the Bisons. This person coached the Bisons for 9 seasons. This person coached in Europe. This person spent some time on NHL benches. This person has 2 Olympic medals, a gold and a silver. Narrow that down a little bit. This person has a phys ed degree and a certification in education from the University of Manitoba, so graduated from the U of M. This person has a local arena named after him. Oh, might give away a little bit more. Him. There you go. After this person. And this person passed away, unfortunately, in 2013. I'll give you a little bit more on that one. A little bit more if you want a little bit more. If you need another clue, call in and ask for a clue. We'll give you a chance to guess after I give you the clue. But if you need a little bit more, I'll give you a little bit more on that in terms of what's happening there. But guess the Bison. If you know the Bison, we'll give you a $25 gift card to Tim Hortons and let you go crazy with that. So, Jay, a lot of news coming out of the hockey world this week. A lot of it not good, but I'm gonna start Stanley Cup playoffs only because we got Brian coming up. We fixed the phone issues. We got everything ready for that now. Awesome. Brian is ready to roll, but the Stanley Cup playoffs went again last night. Game 4 lot of controversy, lot of anger, a lot of oh my god after the game ended in the overtime goal. Nazem Kadri scored the winner, coming back after that ridiculous hand injury and playing in a cast and doing all the crazy stuff, but scored the game winner. A lot of controversy in the fact that it looked like Nathan MacKinnon was maybe on the ice just a wee bit too long.
Yeah, at this point, like, when it comes to goal controversies and, like, reviews, I just kind of throw my hands up, like, I don't know.
Okay, so here's the thing, and I know that people are going to get mad, and I know that people have certainly have a reason to be angry, be unhappy, be whatever, in terms of the results last night. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem that I have, and this has nothing to do with the players, it has nothing to do with the two teams. Overtime is fine, everything's going on. The referee along the benches, or the referee, the linesman along the benches, who is supposed to be keeping an eye on players coming on and off the ice, in terms of looking for too many men, too many players on the ice, was down to call that icing off that Darcy Kuemper came out to play. Okay, so he was going into the zone, Darcy Kuemper came out to play it, he waved it off. As he made his way back to the neutral zone, Tampa Bay was making their change.
Yep.
And he was puck-watching as the puck went to the far side and almost ran into defenders that were coming onto the ice. Mm-hmm. He didn't even look up. He didn't even see the Colorado player.
Yeah.
So getting that call, having that call go against Colorado is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Simply because, it's a little bit of human error, but it's also the fact that the long change hurt Tampa Bay in that situation because they were caught with the puck coming back up the ice. The guys had to fly onto the ice and get onto the ice as soon as they could. I don't have a problem with what went on. I don't have a problem with them saying that it was maybe wrong, that there was too many players on the ice. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, a fast game, and the linesman didn't see it because he was trying to avoid a collision. So if the linesman would have run into one of the defenders, Tampa Bay would have complained. Mm-hmm. And if Vasilevskiy doesn't make the save, which he didn't, Tampa Bay has something to complain about. This is not a question of conspiracy or anything like that. I heard, I don't know how many people throw that out last night. This is legitimately just a guy, a linesman, doing his job and then trying to not get in trouble.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
If the NHL controlled what happened in hockey games, the Toronto Maple Leafs would win every single Stanley Cup because they'd make
okay, that might be a conspiracy, but
but yeah, like, here's this is the thing, right? Like, hockey fans want perfection, right? Hockey fans want everything to be the perfect call all the time, and you're playing a game with a frozen piece of rubber on an ice sheet with knife shoes.
Where guys are flying around the ice at 30,
exactly.
40 miles an hour, yeah.
Things are going to get missed. Issues are going to happen. Obviously, there are things we can set up around that to try and reduce the amount of issues that happen or the missed calls that happen, but to me, it seems like this one in particular was just human error in that the linesman literally didn't see it.
Again, I watched that. I replayed it a number of times. I went back and watched it a number of times yesterday. It's not that he made a mistake. Again, the puck watching might have been a bit of a mistake. He should have been probably watching what was going on at both benches. Although, again, Colorado wasn't making a change other than having one guy who had already jumped over the boards, Kadri, and one guy coming off, MacKinnon, who was coming off late. So not noticing that Kadri had come on the ice wouldn't have prompted him to look up at the Colorado bench unless he had a reason to.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't look further ahead was because there were three Lightning players that he almost ran into.
I think it kind of gets to that conversation that happened, I believe, was it last year where Colorado had that weird offside call?
Tampa Bay and the Islanders. Tampa Bay had seven players.
About when
that was a couple years
ago. Landeskog and MacKinnon stepping off the ice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We get into the conversation of, is the player actually a part of play, and does that impact the outcome of the play? If MacKinnon is, you know, away from the puck, he's not touching it, he's dawdling on his way back to the bench while Kadri is cutting right into the zone, he's going to take that shot and win the game. We get into a conversation of, does it matter that MacKinnon isn't exactly off the ice yet, or he's taking a little bit too long, if he's so far away from the play where he can't have a physical impact on what actually happens? Like, I think that's kind of where this conversation needs to go, or we start to think about, like, hey, at what point do we draw the line of, like, where do we draw the line for something like this?
Well, I mean, I get that there are rules that are set up to mm-hmm. prevent, you know, players from just skating off whenever they want. Like, I get that that's how the game is played. My concern with this, though, is that if he had taken out a Lightning player, again, if there had been a collision with a Lightning player, the Lightning would have been all over the officials at that point.
Yeah.
If he had called legitimately, if he had, you know, not called the icing properly, Colorado would have been all over him. So he was mm-hmm. down there doing his job. Again, I cannot fault the official for doing his job properly. The fact that the long change nearly caused a collision, and again, credit to I can't remember who it was, Bowen Byram, who moved the puck quickly up the ice, which mm-hmm. caused Tampa Bay to not come on, had to, like I said, literally rush guys onto the ice. Mm-hmm. They legitimately jumped out of that gate and again, the linesman nearly ran into him. If the linesman crashes into those guys, Tampa Bay is all up in arms about that.
Yeah.
Missing the fact that they missed, again, you can complain, and this goes to your point, mm-hmm. you can complain about MacKinnon standing beside the gate all you want. He was not involved in that play.
Yes.
The fact is that you had two defensemen that were trapped on the ice, Tampa Bay, that got caught against a guy who was coming off fresh. Granted, the change was questionable, yes. but he was fresh. And then you let him walk around you as a defender and score underneath Vasilevsky's arm.
Yeah.
If Vasilevsky makes that save, nobody's complaining.
Yeah. It's just the fact that he scored, right?
Right.
And you're looking for something to complain about when, yeah, it is true. The change took a long time. It wasn't exactly.
It wasn't clean. Yeah, I agree.
But like exactly. MacKinnon didn't have an impact on, he was out of the play essentially, and Kadri was not. So, like, I can't remember. I'm trying to remember. It might have been like a prospective rule change that was bandied about it, like one of the crazy rule changes that was bandied about at GM meetings, or it might have been something. I, for some reason, think it had something to do with when my brother played roller hockey, but there was either actually there or was proposed that there would be like a zone in front, kind of like lacrosse, where there's a zone in front of the board.
It would be the new trapezoid, is what you're saying?
Kind of. Where, like, when you're within a certain distance of the bench, that's when you're out of the play and you're going for the change. And that, if the puck goes in there and you touch it, obviously it's too many men on the ice or whatever. But it gives just a zone where it's like, he is out of the play. He cannot impact the play in any way. It doesn't matter if his feet are on the ice or he's over the boards. He is out of the play.
Right.
Just to add clarity, so it's one less thing for people to bring up when something like this happens.
See, and again, I'm not complaining about the mask off rule yesterday. Darcy Kuemper lost his mask in that first goal.
Yeah.
And Cirelli was allowed to put it in. It's written into the rules that if there's no scoring play, we call it dead. But if there's a chance for a goal, we don't call it dead. We've seen Roberto Luongo, Jonathan Quick, for example, lose a glove where they've had to make a save with their bare hand, for example, because they cannot call it dead if there's a scoring chance. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that rule, the same way as I don't have a problem with what happened last night, in that this is a guy, the linesman, making the right call in order to keep the flow of the game going. We want mm-hmm. more goals. We want to see fast hockey. Makes the right call, nearly gets in a collision, and misses a guy who, like you said, nowhere close to the play.
Yeah.
If any of the Tampa Bay guys had legitimately either hauled down Kadri or Vasilevsky had made the save, again, we're not even talking about this play today.
Yeah.
But c'est la vie. There are breaks that happen all over the ice all mm-hmm. the time, and mistakes that are made all over the ice all the time.
Tampa Bay had that 10-minute review where John Cooper had 2 minutes to like look at the iPad
right.
and try and decide, and
so
then the review took however long. Like, this is the hockey gods reacting.
Thoughts on, do you think that Colorado closes out in Colorado in game 5 tomorrow, or is this going to be a 6-7 game series now?
I am still pure, like, fully of the mind that this is going to 7 games. Like, there's no other way. Just the quality of this hockey, the thing for me is, even though that record has been broken, that streak has been broken, Tampa Bay still has this amazing ability to rally and respond when they lose a hockey game. This is a team that's won back-to-back Stanley Cups. This is a team that, if they had not run into the Miracle Columbus Blue Jackets, could be on their third Stanley Cup already. Like, this is an amazing hockey team that knows how to win. They've been together. They can rally. I fully expect them to come out tomorrow and to win a hockey game, this is the type of team, and John Cooper does that for this team. They just leave everything out on the ice, and I don't see that changing, and I think they have the edge on Colorado where they can do something like that and push this series a little bit further than people are probably... it could have been a completely different situation had that play broken differently.
Right, sure, yeah.
Yesterday, we could have a 2-2 series heading back to Colorado, but it's a 3-1 series. But that's a testament to how tight this series really is. Like, those first two games aside, that's what we were expecting.
Well, even the third game, 6-2 Tampa Bay. There have been explosions where teams have legitimately, their offenses kicked it into high gear and mm-hmm. pulled away, right? I'm not against the idea that we may go 7 games. I'm against the idea of going 6 games. If it's done in 5 games tomorrow, mm-hmm. My only complaint is it didn't go long enough. Legitimately, this has been excellent hockey to watch. Mm-hmm. That power play that Colorado has is insanity, number one. But number two, Tampa Bay's resilience is just in... I have never seen a team legitimately take as many punches, mm-hmm. quote-unquote figuratively punches, and respond every single time.
Yeah, and they've got guys on that team that are able to, up and down the lineup, they've got guys that can play, that are willing. Like, the resurgence of Nick Paul has been amazing to watch. Like, this year, just the way that he's done for this team.
I don't know if resurgence is correct. He was good for Ottawa, just that Ottawa didn't have very many good players.
Yeah, but him kind of stepping forward and being the guy to get things done when they need to. Like, the goals that he scored against Toronto in Game 7,
those were huge, yeah.
Broke the hearts of Maple Leafs Nation.
Former senator crushing the Leafs Nation.
Exactly,
again.
And then, obviously you have Corey Perry there who's trying to pull a Marian Hossa here.
I got to hand it to Corey Perry. He's going to sign with Colorado next year if they win the Stanley Cup,
yeah.
I guess. So.
Exactly. Just keep the streak going. Exactly, yeah. Even you go down like Ross Colton. Like, who knew who Ross Colton was until this last season?
Well, you really look at how some of the guys, that they kind of, we're relying on him previously. Alex Killorn, mm-hmm. Andre Palat haven't really been the guys that have been. They've been good. Don't get me wrong. They've been solid in terms of their contributions, but haven't been the guys that have been letting up. Yeah, Kucherov. Yeah, Stamkos. Yeah, point mm-hmm. in terms of what's gone on. But really, when you look at this team, you go the Belmars, that fourth line, that Maroon, Perry, and whoever's centering them at that point. Whether it's again, there's a handful of guys through there.
Yep.
You just go that line. It doesn't score a lot, doesn't have to score a lot, but man, do they just take a lot out of the other team. They just wear you down.
That's what you need. It reminds me of kind of what in the Chicago Blackhawks heyday when they were winning the Stanley Cups. They didn't have four lines that could score against you. They had two lines that could do that, but the other lines, all they were out there for was to kill time. Like, Nicholas Hjalmarsson
legitimately, the other guys catch a breath and then we'll get back at it.
Like, their second pair, their Hjalmarsson Oduya pair that they had for a number of years, their only job was to muck things up and make it hard and just kill time to let Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith rest.
Right.
Because they were going to play an hour a night. When you have lines, you don't need every single line to be competitive and to score. You just need every line to have a job that contributes to every other line being able to effectively do their job.
So Colorado leads 3-1 after a big win last night in overtime. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. They could wrap it up in Denver mm-hmm. at home. Could be interesting to see. I expect that crowd just to be ridiculous tomorrow. And that video of them singing Blink 182's All the Small Things, that's crazy. That's fantastic. So good on the fans there. But let's get to the big story that we're going to cover this week, only because, again, I think this is one that hit both of us in terms of us sort of sitting down and going, okay, there's a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
As you probably heard, as you may know, folks, Hockey Canada has been under the spotlight over the last week, mainly because of one single incident that's now spawned an entire investigation by the Canadian government. As you may know, and I'm going to say this up front, if you're having problems and you're struggling with any sort of conversation we're having here about sexual assault, I will have some information at the end in terms of who to contact at that point. But
and this is a trigger warning for sexual assault and what we're going
to be referring to. Make sure that we give you some information as to where to go, who to see, and who to talk to if you need some help that way. But in saying that, I want to make sure that everybody's aware of this. So a little bit of PG parental warning on this is that we're going to talk, you know, some legal garbage here that it's important, but man, it's disturbing.
Doesn't get easier.
No. So Hockey Canada has been dragged in front of a parliamentary committee about a settled civil suit where a young lady basically alleged that 8 members, partly from Hockey Canada, all from the CHL, had sexually assaulted her after a Hockey Canada golf gala back in 2018. The parliamentary committee wanted to know whether or not any of the public money that's given to them via the government and or any of the insurance money that they've received was used to pay off that settlement that happened. The woman was seeking $3.55 million in damages, reportedly. The final settlement amount was not released due to an NDA that had been signed that Tom Rennie told the parliamentary committee that didn't happen, or told TSN's Rick Westhead didn't happen, and then apparently told the Minister of Sport that it did happen. So, okay, there's already a problem there, but whatever. It wasn't a criminal proceeding in terms of what Parliament was doing. They were not looking to charge anybody. They simply wanted answers as to what went on.
That's the important part here. This is not a... I mean, there's criminal elements to this matter, but it is a civil suit.
Right. We're not looking to point fingers here, but we will probably have some opinions and some ideas that could change things for the better. I'm going to say that nicely now, because as it stands right now, things are not good. Yeah. And so let's get to the facts here. On April 20th, 2018, a woman filed a civil lawsuit against Hockey Canada. Oh, I guess April 20th this year, I guess it was. Woman filed a civil lawsuit against Hockey Canada, the Canadian Hockey League, and 8 CHL players in Ontario Superior Court in London, Ontario. The lawsuit from the woman says, again, she was sexually assaulted by 8 CHL players, some including the 2017-2018 World Junior Championship team. So Hockey Canada gets roped into this. It happened, again, after Hockey Canada Foundation Golf and Gala event on June 18th, 2018. The woman chose not to reveal her identity, has chosen to remain confidential through this entire proceeding. The 8 players have not been named. They are all John Doe's 1 through 8. They have not been identified whatsoever, and the lawsuit does refer to them as John Doe's 1 through 8. Mm-hmm. So just so everybody's aware, we do not have identities of who these players are or anything like that. The lawsuit was settled in May. According to what went on, the case has not been heard in a court of law. There has been no deliberation by a judge or jury on this. Terms of the settlement have not been released. So there is the main facts that you have for what happened. Again, a sexual assault, 2018, after a Hockey Canada Golf and Gala event by 8 players on this young woman, has resulted in a massive settlement being paid out by Hockey Canada. Mm-hmm. We don't know the amount, but we're assuming it's probably somewhere around the requested amount and or more. Mm-hmm. So Hockey Canada said on Monday it doesn't know the identities of the 8 players, which automatically, to me, raises a red flag that why is Hockey Canada settling on behalf of players they don't even know who did it?
Mm-hmm. So
I get the liability part. I'm not trying.
That's what I was about to bring up.
Right. I'm not about to negate the liability for Hockey Canada because it was their event. But wouldn't it, don't get me wrong, I don't normally pay bills for other people and not know who they are. Mm-hmm. I would like to know who these 8 players are before I actually start making payments for them.
Yes. And if I were Hockey Canada, I would, because of their liability, they were going to have to pay something because it was their event. But exactly with what you said, why are they stepping in on behalf of these 8 players? Why would you not let the case play its course?
So one of the things that bothered me the most when I was watching this, and again, I'm not trying to take anything, but Hockey Canada Chief Operating Officer Scott Smith said that Hockey Canada did not mandate or order all the players on the team to participate in the investigation that they ran. So if you knew who all of the players were on your 2018, 2017, 2018 team that went to the World Juniors, why would you not order them all to sit down and talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
Like that alone, that to me legitimately leaves so many holes in this story, in this settlement that I don't understand what Hockey Canada is doing here other than just saving face.
In this year, like in 2022, like this should be a part, like having them sit down, knowing who they are, because I don't have any indication of that they exactly know who they are. Like, we can't confirm that they know who it is. We can suspect, but as a matter of course, it should, like, if you're willing and if you want answers, so this, say, doesn't happen again, or so you know and you can do better, I don't care if you don't know the eight players. Bring every single player in and ask them the question until you find out.
So again, to that point, there's a law firm, the contacted by Hockey Canada, early stages of the investigation. Sport Canada was informed of the incident on June 26, 2018. The London Police were informed on June 19, 2018. They did an investigation as well. Tom Rennie, the outgoing CEO of Hockey Canada, said that speculation the incident was covered up was, quote, an inaccurate, unquote. Although, again, I'm going to say that that's not true. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it is a cover-up. Smith, though, later added that he adamantly opposes the suggestion the incident was covered up. So I don't know how you would say it's not when, and here's the part, February 2019, Hockey Canada was notified there would be no further investigation by the London Police, which means that their investigation went cold, so they couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey Canada continued its investigation, though, and suspended it in September 2020 because it could not identify the eight John Does and did not get a statement from the woman.
Couldn't or wouldn't is my question.
Could not and did not is the way that it's framed. I don't know if it's true. I don't know what's gone on. I don't know how hard they tried. But the answer simply is, what are you doing paying this woman if you didn't even talk to her? Again, you're legitimately just saving. This is not accountability. This is go away money.
Yes. That's all it is. Like, there. It to me, like reading all of this and hearing all of it, it does not scream to me that they want to be better, that they just want this situation gone. And like
now, Rennie has come out and said that the independent investigation we commissioned could not ultimately be completed because the young woman chose not to speak to the investigator. Well, why would she? What's the framing here for? Like, it's still your job to speak to the players.
Yeah, try harder.
Rennie said early in the hearing that 4 to 6 players participated in the investigation. Smith later in the hearing said it was more like 12 to 13.
So most of the team.
That's a huge gap between those two numbers. 4 to 6 to 12 to 13. How are you not on the same page?
What that tells me is either one of them doesn't know what they're talking about, or neither of them know what they're talking about.
Well, again, it's hard to legitimately look at this now and go, okay, well, your testimony holds water. You guys don't even know what you're talking about. You guys have completely different numbers.
Yeah.
Gary Bettman and Bill Daly have both said the NHL will conduct an investigation and will speak to every one of the players on that 2017-2018 World Junior team.
Like I said before, the fact that you're making me side with the NHL is a mistake. Because don't make me side with NHL is doing a good job.
Again, I don't want to ever credit Bettman and Daly for doing the right thing, but
this is the right thing.
This is more than the right thing. They are doing. They're doing exactly what Hockey Canada should have done.
Yes.
So again, Hockey Canada was asked, "Why did you settle the lawsuit then if you couldn't legitimately complete the investigation?" This is their entire quote. Quote: "We settled the claim quickly because we felt a moral obligation to respond to the alleged behavior that occurred at one of our events by players who attended our invitation," unquote, Tom Rennie had stated. Quote, "We felt that the right response to the woman's legal request was one that did not require her to participate in a prolonged court proceeding. The settlement enables her to seek whatever support she might require as she tries to move past this incident," unquote.
So
this is go away money.
I'm going to peel back the curtain here because one of the, you know, I shared an office with a colleague who studied intimate partner violence, domestic violence, sexual assault.
Yeah.
When this came out, as I did with prior cases, these are not comparable, but as I have in the past, I went and I asked, hey, I asked experts in this field, hey, what would, if somebody files a lawsuit like this, what, like, why, outside of monetary compensation, because money doesn't fix everything, why would people want to do something like this? Why would they file a suit like this? Because they want answers. Because they want the people responsible. They might not be able to get them criminally charged, but they want their truth to be told with their allegations, with their arguments, and they want the people responsible to be held accountable and to have to face up to what they've done.
I'm only going to say this because you're bringing up accountability, a lot of accountability right there, because again, face up to basically face the crime. Like,
yes,
like do the time, face the crime.
You might not go to prison, but you have to stand there and defend yourself.
Smith is on record as saying, quote, in recent years, I believe we've reported 3 incidents of assault as required, and I know this is one of them. I cannot comment on the level of investigation of the other 2. I do not have that information in front of me. My understanding is that we've had 1 to 2 cases on an annual basis over the last 5 to 6 years, unquote.
The low end of that is 6 cases. The high end of that is 12 in 6 years. Like, this points to a systemic issue.
The part that's laughable to me is the quote that he said, quote, I will tell you that 1 in the last 5 to 6 years, not 1 to 2 each year, 1 in the last 5 to 6 years is too many, and that's why we're driven to change the culture of this game. Hey, after 1, maybe change the culture, you idiot.
Yeah.
But not 1 to 2 per year after the first 1.
Yes.
Change the culture, you idiot. No.
And part of that is not just saying, oh, you want X number of dollars, here, go away. It's, okay, we will cooperate. You will get whatever you are owed for this. But we will, as a sign of good faith, and for some reason, the one lesson the NHL's learned in the last few years is you do have to do this for people to trust you. You go and you do your due diligence, you talk to the people involved, and you have them held accountable. That's how you change culture. You hold people accountable for the things that, even if these allegations had been proven to be false, it still shows that you care and you're doing your due diligence.
So funding has been pulled. St. Ange, the sport minister, has pulled all Canadian funding from Canadian government funding.
Because the government doesn't like when their money is used for not good things.
And will not reinstate it until Hockey Canada signs up with an impartial government party that legitimately can assign blame if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey Canada's refused to do that. So to me, this means that your culture has not changed.
They're
now
scared.
You're legitimately not changing culture. All you're doing is covering up.
If there was not a problem, they would have signed up like that.
Again, if you're interested in changing your culture, you sign up like that.
Yes.
If you're interested in talking about culture change, you let the culture change immediately by signing that document.
What them getting cold feet on signing up, it shows to me, is they're scared that the doors are going to be blown off if they do.
Well, I mean, there's going to be more that comes out of this. Again, we can't go too deep into this because, again, there hasn't been a lot of results coming out of this other than the fact that Pascal St-Ange, Minister of Sport Pascal St-Ange, removed that funding. But we'll have to see exactly what goes on beyond this. But as of right now, that is a dark tarnish on that Hockey Canada logo.
Yes.
So we'll see what happens from here. But we do have a guy on the phone, though. Not to get out of a serious thing, but into we want to bring a little more fun back to this. We do have a guy on the phone who is willing to talk a little bit about I'm pretty sure the Tampa Bay Lightning and probably the New York Rangers a tiny, tiny little bit. But, Brian, are you there?
Hi, how's it going?
Svenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. Heard you guys talking about the last segment. Just wanted to point something out. If the government really didn't want to spend money on things that weren't good, the Conservative Party would have lost funding ages ago.
You know what, Brian? I'm going to say this only, and I'm not a conservative. I want people to know I'm party neutral in terms of I want to vote on policy, but the Conservatives are the ones that went after Hockey Canada the hardest on this. So I don't know what's going on, but it's almost like they have, I don't know, a little bit of morals left in their body, but I don't know.
At least when it comes to money.
maybe the money part is what they're most worried about.
Yeah.
In saying that, though, Brian, you had the Rangers, and the Rangers obviously were eliminated by Tampa Bay last week, but I'm pretty sure that you weren't very unhappy about that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd call it a hedge against happiness. If the Lightning had lost there, then, you know, at least I would have still had a chance. A minimal one, seeing as how powerhouse the Avalanche are, but a small chance at whatever prize you were offering.
The prize that's up for grabs, and it's still, I mean, again, still opportunity for the last two competitors to win. The prize that's up for grabs is a Vegas Golden Knights reverse retro jersey. So,
oh, that's a really cool prize.
Yeah, so I mean, there was an option there for somebody to win, but Brian, you're going to have to take us out of the Rangers Survivor Series here and get everything ready to go. Are you prepared to talk a little bit about the Rangers and or a lot about the Lightning in terms of how dominant they were in that series?
Whatever you want to talk about, yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'll give you a couple of minutes to do the exit interview here. Feel free to go crazy, but and talk about whatever you want. But the floor is yours, sir. When you're ready.
I think the thing that we've all realized over a number of years, especially in the NHL, is that as far as the playoffs are concerned, goaltending seems to be king at just about every single intersection. Occasionally, you find a team that outperforms its goaltending, but for the most part, it's the other way around. If you have a good goaltender, especially one that catches hot, you're the one that ends up going far. And the Rangers, as of right now, have the best goaltender on the planet in Igor Shesterkin, and he performs like it. He was the reason why they managed to continuously get outshot at 5-on-5, to get continuously outchanced at 5-on-5, and still managed to make hay out of it. You know, that kid's got a really, really bright future. But as the Montreal Canadiens showed this year, even if you did have a goaltender that carried you as far or farther than your talent allowed you in the playoffs, doesn't always manage to produce reoccurring results. So as far as the Rangers are concerned, it was a fun run. It showed that they are done the rebuild and that it's time to, you know, make some moves. We'll see if Chris Drury is the one to make those moves. And they're going to have to rely on players making a step up. Lafreniere is going to have to be better. Kaapo Kakko is going to have to be better going forward. But as far as Ranger fans are concerned, it's a pretty successful result this playoff. You can't be unhappy with what happened. You got outplayed completely by the back-to-back defending Stanley Cup champions. And you know, at the end of the day, it was a good run.
Not going to deny that. I think it was a good run by the Rangers. I mean, they turned it around after in that Penguin series, and then they certainly plowed through the next series against, it was a Carolina. Sure, they beat up on, and then took the Lightning to two games. They were up two games anyway before the Lightning stormed back. But I mean, it was one of those series where I mean, legitimately, one bounce one way could have changed everything. But it was a good run for the Rangers. But I got to ask you, Brian, because I know again you're a huge Lightning fan. Thoughts on the game last night? I want to hear your thoughts on that.
It is an interesting one, right? You know, there's a lot of people out there who are talking about you know, how bad NHL officiating is, and I'm not here to dissuade that. But you know, they're humans and sometimes you get stuff wrong,
We were talking about this at the very beginning of the show. Because I wanted to make it clear that the linesman who followed the puck down to wave off the icing when Kemper came out to play it nearly ran into all of the Lightning that were escaping the bench to come on the ice. Would you have been angrier if he had taken down a player but called the penalty? Because at the end of the day, I mean, the goal was scored. If Vasilevskiy makes a save, no big deal. If one of the Tampa Bay players takes him down, but if he takes down one of the Lightning players, are you angry about that? Because he legitimately almost collided with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that moment. Like, the whole entire game, I thought, was pretty poorly officiated.
Okay.
You know, one going the other way. How do you... it was very unclear what happened with the Kemper mask situation on the Lightning first goal.
Well, the Lightning, again, that's written clearly into the rule book, though, and the referees
if
got
the
that
puck
right.
Is the thing, if the puck is the thing that dislodges the mask, I agree. They called that 100% correctly.
Right, the high
if
stick.
The Lightning
though.
Player makes contact with Kemper and is the reason why Kemper's mask becomes dislodged, then that's goaltender interference, and that should be called.
Correct, yes. I don't disagree with you on that. That is exactly true.
It happened so quickly; it was really impossible to tell, and that's why I'm saying, like, you're at the end of the day, they're human and they're going to make mistakes. Reality, when it comes down to it, is that Colorado seems to be the better team, and after winning two Stanley Cup championships, if you go out on your shield to a team that's better than you. You know, you can't really be unhappy. It's what happened, right? Like, the Islanders went out to the Oilers in the 80s. It happens. Sometimes, eventually, there's a better team.
I mean, can we honestly say, though, that, I mean, looking at next season and beyond, I mean, this Tampa Bay team is a dynasty, right? Like, I mean, they're going to be good for a long time, mm-hmm. it seems, because of the way that they're constructed, the way that Julian Breezeball has put this team together now. I don't think we're not going to stop talking about Tampa Bay having deep playoff runs for the next few years. Even if they do lose this year, it might be like the Oilers where they got that hiccup in 1986 before they came back and won a couple more.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Yeah, absolutely. I think if the Lightning do manage to, and I don't want to put them in the grave yet.
No,
they have to win three in a row, which is highly unlikely in a league that's as coin flippy as the NHL, but. You know, it's not impossible. And if they do manage to, you know, come back and win three cups in a row, you have to talk about them in the greatest team of all time conversation. But you are right that even if they don't win this year, the possibility for them to come back and win again next year, it exists. And that'd be pretty cool. For me, they won two in a row. It's all gravy. It's all pretty cool after this.
I mean, like I said, I've been calling them a dynasty for the last mm-hmm. you know, year, only because, again, it takes immense talent and certainly a ton of resolve to get to three straight Stanley Cup finals, let alone win two of them. And, I mean...
Add on top of that they have been to six of the last eight Eastern Conference championships.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, I mean, we're talking about a team now that's pretty much dominated for the better part of a decade. Like, we can't be not giving them their credit when it comes to how good they are. So.
And it's not over yet. Like,
no,
still
exactly.
Got these
They're
players
still...
locked up for quite a while.
Yeah,
you've got younger players that are coming on the way. Like, the Lightning have done an amazing job of constructing the current team and the team of the future.
Yeah, hockey is a hard sport on the body, you know, and after playing this many games, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the players on this team are just not the same ever again.
I want to ask one thing, and you can certainly, again, I want your opinion on Brian, so I'll definitely ask you, but Braden Point, is his absence a much bigger problem than if he had been playing this entire series? Would the series be 2-2 right now?
I don't know. I mean, you could say the same thing about Nazem Kadri for the Colorado Avalanche, right?
Right.
Braden Point is probably the second best skater on the Tampa Bay Lightning right now. Maybe third, depending on how you want to grade the current level of Victor Hedman. But it's, you know, it, obviously missing out on one of your three best players is suboptimal. But, you know, every single team and every single player at this point in time in the playoffs is hiding or nursing something.
That is always the case, it seems, that there's always a plethora, a laundry list of injuries that everybody brings out once the team gets eliminated. So we'll have to see how everybody's sort of holding up after this, how much duct tape and Band-Aids are holding players together. But it was a good run, Brian. I mean, like I said, you made it to an Eastern Conference final with the Rangers, and your team has a chance at the Stanley Cup still. So congratulations on a fairly successful survivor pool for you.
Yeah, thanks. And I mean, at the end of the day, we got the final that everybody was hoping for, and
exactly.
They are playing the hockey that everybody wanted to see.
That's the best part of it. We are, like I said, hoping for... I don't want it to end... again, as much as I know Colorado does, I don't really want it to end tomorrow because I'd like to see at least one or two more games. So
I think it's done tomorrow.
Unfortunately, I think you might be right. But at the same time, though, I feel like we're going to get robbed of a couple more, you know, dynamite games out of these two teams.
So. I have faith. It's going the distance. It's going to happen. It's the NHL. Well,
I'm glad you have more faith in my team than I do.
Brian, we want to thank you for playing, and obviously welcome back next year if you're going to come back and join the Survivor Pool again. We want you back if you're interested in coming back. So thanks for making it fun this year for us.
Always happy to join the pool. Always happy to join the show.
Whenever we can, we're going to bring you back on, so be prepared. We'll give you a heads up, and we'll bring you back for some chatter for sure.
All right, thanks, Todd and Teebs. Go Bison.
There you go. Have a good one, Brian. Thanks for doing this again.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So Brian is done officially in terms of the Survivor Pool. Let's bring Jeff in for the send-off.
Tribe spoken.
And Rangers are officially taken care of and out, leaving just two. So that'll leave Sydney and Matt. Matt with a 3-1 lead over Sydney right now just because of that. Some small stories. Want to go over through a few small stories here, Jay, as we sort of get ready to shut down the show here? Yeah, you good with that?
Yeah.
U of R's Connor Chalk. Am I pronouncing his name right? Yep. Is that right, Chalk? Okay, I was going to say
I've said it enough times.
I know. What was it the other day that I saw online or whatever? And I was like, oh my god! Like they completely people have been. The 2V Lou. When he was on the RuPaul show, and the internet lost its mind when they pronounced her name, and she was like, no, that's actually how you pronounce it.
Or like we've somehow. After he's been in the NHL for so long, we have reopened the debate of how do you say Valerie Nichushkin's last name?
Right, yeah. Or Chiasson when Alex Chiasson was...
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, so Connor Chalk has left the U of R. He graduated this year. He'll be playing next year. He signed with the ECHL's Trois-Rivières-Lyon, which is fantastic. He had 17 points in 17 games in Canada West last year. Was always dynamite for the Regina Cougars as well, so good to see him moving on and finding a good home there.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player, and I think in that team, like Trois-Rivières, is shaping up to be something great. Like it's a new franchise,
brand new,
and he's got a chance to continue on his hockey career. And he, you know, a guy that really didn't get to shine as much as he probably, like, unless you were paying attention to the Regina Cougars and. You know, being
well, he went to a couple of the World Junior versus U Sports camps there.
Like always, a guy that you could always, if you watch him, you can see like, oh, this guy's a great hockey player. But he was just with the Regina Cougars, so you didn't really notice. And when awards came around, his name wasn't really ever in the conversation. But he was obviously had the talent because he kept going out to represent U Sport and Can West and represent his country. So. He's a great player, and I'm really excited to see what he does on the professional stage.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on Trois-Rivières next year with Connor playing for them. Also going to keep an eye on the SDHL is Mount Royal University's Anna Pershke, who played her final year. She is heading over to Lexand next year, so she'll be joining Lexand over in the SDHL alongside Celine Tardif of the UBC Thunderbirds. She was playing for Lexan this past year. Again, ton of Canada West women playing over in the SDHL next year. A ton of U Sports women playing over there as well, just in terms of in general. But good to see Anna continuing on. I know there were some questions as to what she was going to do next after sort of finishing a career and maybe taking another year of school, maybe going back for a master's degree. Mm-hmm. But it looks like she's going to pursue the hockey avenue for at least one more year, maybe longer. Because if you remember, Lexan is where... Jordan Colleton went, the head coach, who's now the head coach of Lexan. She was at MRU last year coaching with Scott Rivett. So I'm pretty sure Jordan's looking for good people to build around, and Anna certainly fits that mold. She is, again, just a dynamite player, and not only in the offensive zone, which, again, we came to rely on saying her name a lot in the offensive zone, but defensively just as good as well in terms of playing a 200-foot game. So good to see Anna doing well with that. Beyond that, the Canada West schedule was put out on Wednesday. For those who haven't seen it, bit of a weird schedule. And I will say that. The women, for example, only play Saskatchewan twice. Not four times, twice. It's a little bit weird that way. They play basically everybody else. They do, again, not a weird thing, but with eight other teams, they're basically only going to see... everybody wants again this year.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
there are some crossovers. I will say that in terms of what's going on, but there are some teams that obviously we miss, which is again, you kind of go, well, what about Saskatchewan? They're our biggest rival. No, Saskatchewan's not. We're only going to see Saskatchewan at home next year in November.
That's something that I don't really understand. Like, I get you're trying to align things in a much more efficient way with, you know, the teams spread the way that they are. But I feel like you could make like an east-west situation where, you know, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Regina, and then you kind of cut the line in the middle of the Alberta teams and say half of you go this way, half of you go this way, and you have more games. You basically create two divisions and you have more games locally or closer to home, but you still go out and you play. You'll play one weekend with UBC, and you'll play one weekend at Trinity Western, or they'll come here.
Like, so you want to hear a weird quirk to the schedule? And again, people are going to go, well, what's going on with that? Like, why are they doing that? Alberta, on February 10th and 11th, sends both their men's and women's teams here.
Huh?
According to this, according to the Bison schedule they put out, I don't think that's right. I still don't think that's right. But
was it going to be a Friday, two Saturdays, and a Sunday?
It would probably be the same thing that happened with Trinity Western last year, where the women play Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and the men play Saturday night, Sunday afternoon.
I mean,
I think that's a mistake, though, because they play Alberta, because, again, Alberta plays at home. We already play Alberta in November, November 4th and 5th at home. So I think there's a mistake on the schedule that the Bisons put out. It doesn't make any sense that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that Manitoba finishes the season in Alberta from what I've seen.
Okay.
So I think it's a mistake. So don't believe what the Bisons put out, folks, because their schedule is incorrect.
We're assuming
if you're putting
incorrect.
It on Twitter and looking at the social media side of it, it's incorrect. I know for a fact it's incorrect because I believe Alberta had that game hyped on their own social media as the very last game of the season against the Bison. So either way, doesn't really matter in terms of what goes on there. Schedules are out. Every other team will see at least home and away, but Saskatchewan we won't, which kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. But either way, no big deal, one way or the other. 10 minutes to go. Let's have some real fun here. You ready?
Yep.
Pete DeBoer goes to Dallas officially.
Not surprised.
It's a mistake, I think, but whatever.
Yeah, you got 40 coaches. 32 already have jobs.
Dan Bylsma goes to Coachella Valley in the AHL. He was actually the associate coach in Charlotte this year while Seattle sorted everything out. But now that they have their own farm team in Coachella Valley, Dan Bylsma will take over as the head coach there.
And California gets one team while it loses one team.
Yeah, Stockton out, Coachella Valley.
I'm interested to see what happens with Coachella Valley. Like, I'm legitimately interested to see how they grow the game there and what the Kraken are going to do with their own farm team now.
There are a lot. Again, not that Coachella Valley's miles away from everybody, but like Ontario's there and San Jose. San Jose's a little further north, but San Diego's down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of good rivalry options there for Coachella Valley if they really want to sort of push that sort of local hockey idea. But
then you've got Nevada just a little bit this way.
Tucson is there in terms of Arizona as well, in terms of what goes on. And Henderson, like you said, Nevada is there as well. So we'll see what happens at that point.
I'm just surprised they didn't do a Portland, like an Oregon-based farm team, just keep it a little bit closer. But Coachella Valley is a great pick.
Well, Portland has always been, and again, this is gonna ruin our time here, but Portland's always been weird because the guy who owns the what is it, the Rose Palace or whatever the hell the arena's called down there, the guy where the Portland Winterhawks play, basically, he won't allow any other teams to come in there. NBA rules the roost, WHL gets second best, and then everybody else can eat crow. So
weird.
Either way, whatever. Paul Allen, the billionaire.
Okay.
It's his team. It's his arena and his team. You don't cross me. Paul Maurice to Florida.
That was a very short sabbatical he had because he said he lost his love for the game.
Did you read the story on what happened?
No.
So he's down there talking to Florida, the Florida reporters. He was flicking channels one night in January, saw the Panthers, watched the whole game, and was like, "That's a team I want to coach." To his wife. He legitimately was off for a couple of weeks and was like, I want to go coach again. And then his son got accepted to the University of Miami. Well, now it's a done deal.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So Paul Maurice is going to kick back and relax in Miami somewhere.
So Andrew Brunette gets coaches the Florida Panthers, takes over.
Andrew Brunette should come to Winnipeg. I'm going to say that right now.
I completely agree. But he takes over after Joel Quenneville is shoved out the door. Not only does the team maintain, they win the President's Trophy.
Correct.
With him as an interim head coach.
Correct.
And then they turn around, because they're paying Paul Maurice more than what he was making in Winnipeg.
Correct.
So they're just throwing money at Paul Maurice.
Correct.
Hoping that he will come in and somehow make this team better.
The thing that kills me about Paul Maurice is he goes from a team that has elite offensive players, a very good goaltender, and no defensive structure, to a team that has elite offensive players, a very good goaltender, and no defensive structure.
And he thinks he's going to do better. He's going to make the same. He's going to hire Dave Lowry to be his assistant.
If Charlie Huddy goes down there, I'm guaranteeing you right now the Panthers miss the playoffs.
Yes. Doesn't matter how good they are.
Doesn't matter how many good offensive players you are.
Aaron Ekblad's going to want to trade out. And
Pierre-Luc Dubois told the Jets that he's willing to test free agency. I don't care what Dubois says at this point. Yes. I mean, I know he's got 2 years left in his restricted free agency. But if Pierre-Luc Dubois wants out, and they've discussed the options of moving Blake Wheeler, and it seems like Blake Wheeler has discussed the options with them, and Mark Scheifele's kind of left it open as to whether or not
he doesn't want to come back. I said it when he made that statement.
Why are we not blowing this up right now with Connor Bedard sitting on the doorstep?
You should. 100%. You should move out. Those three guys, say goodbye. You have let the ship sail in your Jets career. Thank you and goodbye.
Like, we just talked about this before the show started. Colorado was dead last in the NHL, 4 years ago? Dead last. Like, they were the worst team in the NHL. And they played all their kids. And look what happened. Look where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that guys like Heinola and Gavanke and Kovacevic and Samberg and those guys aren't ready to move up, because again, a couple of those guys might be a little raw still, but at least Samberg and Heinle have shown they can skate in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that a few of the guys down on the farm aren't ready, the Gustafsons and that kind of stuff, aren't ready to maybe take that next step and be thrown into NHL action. At some point, you legitimately can do what Colorado did and annex your entire team, just blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Just destroy any structure you have and start fresh with a guy like Andrew Brunette or a guy like whoever, a guy who is coming in that wants to build a program from scratch and really look at this and go, here are the pieces that I want in order to make this work.
I completely agree with you, because you just let them play and they'll figure it out, or they won't. And, you know, the Winnipeg fans love hockey. Happy when the Jets came back. Went through all of the crap of the first few years while this team tried to build up, and it kind of got just tossed away, more or less. But I think they're more Jets fans, from what I've seen, are more apathetic than anything. And what with this team right now, the way to galvanize them is say, we're going to play the young guys. We're going to not tank for Connor Bedard, and we're going to change things up. My other thought is Barry Trotz really wants to get into a front office position sooner rather than later. Why not 2 years as head coach, and he gets to build the team he will then take over?
Because I don't think that option is available to him. He does not get to build as long as Chevy and Chipman are running the show.
I don't know. My crazy conspiracy brain is working. I'm thinking that's what's going to happen.
It would be all right, but
Andrew Brunette would be an amazing choice to bring in.
A couple other smaller stories. Ottawa paved the way for a new barn downtown today. LeBreton Flats is going to be developed. Looks like somewhere on Albert Street is where they sort of narrowed it down to. So Ottawa may have a new downtown arena being built in the near future. So let's keep public funds out of that and let the rich people build their own houses.
Yes.
And a weird fun story to finish us off with. Former Moose goalie Carl Gehring. Now, people might remember Carl Gehring. He played one season in Manitoba, I think. 26 games or something is all he played. But still, goaltender here. Carl Gehring probably better known for his time at North Dakota. But Carl Gehring made front page news in Grand Forks the other day because his daughter Lily did something that nobody else has done. For those that might watch those crazy reality TV shows, Lily Gehring went off and won NBC's Dancing with Myself, the show hosted by Shakira and Nick Jonas, on Tuesday night.
Incredible.
She's 16. She dances for dance, some sort of dance school or whatever. Mm-hmm. $25,000 prize money for winning that. And she's looking for possibly more opportunities to dance and do stuff in the future.
Yeah.
For those asking, Carl Gehring's still an assistant coach with UND, and he does live in Las Vegas. Him and his family live in Las Vegas in terms of where they set up. But I got to say, that's a pretty cool story for Lily to sort of outshine her dad, considering her dad was the famous one for the longest time.
Yeah, now she's the famous one of the family. That's a fun little story. And what is reality TV these days?
I don't know. Whatever. Like I said, I just saw that story and I was like, that can't be, there's no relation there. There's a relation there. Carl Gehring's daughter. So congratulations. With that, folks, we are basically out of time. Jason, anything you want to promote before we get out of here? Because we are legitimately running short quickly on time here.
Let's talk about every Tuesday, 11 to 11:30 here on 101.5 UMFM.
In saying that, folks, out of here for another week. Nobody phoned in for the Guess the Bison, so we're going to continue running that next week. If you need a clue, hit me up on Twitter. I'll certainly answer you there. But as it stands right now, nobody's won the gift card, so we'll continue going for next week. That, folks, here's a little Weezer to take you out on a Thursday night here on The Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
Thank you. Thank you and good night. Good night.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.